Lake Effect continues now on 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Bonnie North. Every year, there are any number of scientific discoveries or events that make the best of lists. Well, our astronomy contributor, Jean Creighton, is no different, and she joins us now to give us her picks for 2019. Hello, Jean.
Hello, Bonnie.
How are you?
I'm doing really well.
Yeah, it's great to see you, and hard to believe it's December 2019. We're about to hit the 2019 solstice. We're wrapping up another year talking with each other about all things astronomical. And so, of course, it's a perfect time to say what cool things happened in this past year. And one of the big ones for me, I have to say, because this is the little girl in me, is the all-female spacewalk.
Yes.
That was so cool. And yeah. I can only hope that there were a whole bunch of other little girls who were watching it going, I want to do that.
That's right. Yes.
Yeah.
The way of saying is the Tereshkova bump. When women saw Tereshkova in space, apparently, in the then Soviet Union, for a couple decades afterwards, there was a real increase in how many women participated in science and engineering because they got inspired. So let's hope that we see that very effect.
When we're old women, we'll be looking at these young women now mm-hmm. who've become the next generation of scientists.
That's right.
Yeah.
And apparently NASA said that they didn't do this on purpose, but that there are enough women in the corps of astronauts that this would happen naturally just because there's more of them. What's interesting here is that the reason why the original crew didn't get to do it was because they didn't have a suit that was suitable for two women at the same time. And that brought, as often these things do, a memory of the legacy that used to be all men and that was all that was assumed. But it also reminds us that when we start thinking about people as individuals, we realize that there are a whole lot of men that aren't the same size. And if we're going to go into space for any long periods of time, we will need to make them custom made. So going forward and thinking about the new missions to the moon and then hopefully to Mars, because people are going to be spending a lot of time in space, they're going to have suits that will be made to their particular size, men or women.
Right. For safety, for comfort, for all of those things, there is no one-size-fits-all, particularly
right.
when we go to space.
That's right.
Yeah.
I'd say, I don't think
ever,
this...
But...
Yeah, yeah. I always laugh when I see things that are one-size-fits-all because they feel... Often they fit nobody. So that's a wonderful occasion to celebrate and to look forward. We are hoping to send men and women to the moon by 2024. And we've talked some about this. This is a necessary step. We need to have, of course, suits for everyone involved.
Well, going from spacewalk to something that's very, 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 very small.
Yes. Yes.
Much smaller than a spacewalk, much smaller than any of the equipment that would take people on a spacewalk. But this is a very cool thing because this tied into Sophia, which you flew on.
Mm-hmm.
And so what are we talking about?
We're talking about the very first molecule that formed in the universe. And I want you to...
It just gives me shivers.
I want you to think about that here. The universe is, you know, 13...
Almost 14.
8, yeah, yeah, almost 14 billion years old. And we had ideas of... We know that we had very, 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 very hot gas that would have been ionized and basically, you know, stripped to its very smallest protons, neutrons floating around. But then how did you start building molecules? And what was the very first molecule? And this celebrates by the name of helium hydride. So this would be helium that's attached to basically a proton because the electron of the hydrogen has gone away.
Okay.
So that's the thing. And that was made in the lab in 1925, almost 100 years ago, but it was elusive. We couldn't identify it in any of the astronomical objects that we've been looking at.
So we had it in the lab, but not in the real world.
Right. So we had made it, so mm-hmm. we knew it was possible to make it. But then the question was, well, where is it? And it's hard to observe. Turns out that if you are where most observatories are, well within the troposphere of the Earth, there's too much water vapor and it absorbs the very radiation that you're trying to see. So what they did was, first of all, they built a particular kind of detector that's sensitive to those very high frequencies that until, say, 5 years ago, we simply wouldn't be able to do. And we took that cool instrument into the stratosphere above most of the water vapor. So they managed to see it for the very first time. And it's always so satisfying to kind of put the piece of the puzzle that's missing. You think you have an idea, but boy, are you looking for some proof. And if you think about, that's the very first molecule that ever took hold in the universe. And from then on, we have this plethora of, well, millions
we have
of molecules.
Everything.
Yes, we have everything, yes. It is an astonishing feat, and one that I must say I'm thrilled that Sophia had that first, since not many people know Sophia, and I'm hoping it will become more of a household name now.
Yeah, and that's just such a cool thing. I mean, it literally gives me goosebumps thinking about this is the very building block, the block that everything else came from.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yay. Yeah. I mean, this is the joy of science, right? Yeah. Every year I wonder, every year I think, I wonder if we're going to have something as cool next year. And invariably we do.
Yeah.
So, yay.
Well, we go from the building block of the universe to something that takes everyone's imagination, even outside of science, which is black holes.
Yes.
And so what was the big black hole thing that happened in 2019?
We have been lucky in the black hole department for the last few years. This year, it was a direct image of a supermassive black hole at the center of a very cool galaxy, which is called M87. I know that
the name's not that sexy.
Yeah,
no.
The name is not so sexy. But what's cool about M87 is that long before we took this picture that I'm going to talk about, we were able to see in radio wavelengths these huge lobes that are almost perpendicular to the galaxy that we see. And the lobes are huge compared to the galaxy that we see. And people have been wondering, what on earth powers these huge lobes to send gas to such great distance? It turns out that at the core, as we now understand of most galaxies, at the core of M87, there is a supermassive black hole that as it spins, it ejects sharp jets that pile into the gas, what we call the interstellar medium, and make these balloons of gas at the intersection of where the jet hits and where clouds of material might be. I mean, Google it. M87.
Okay.
You'll see the beautiful jets and you'll see the beautiful image. Now, we already knew there was a black hole there. And this galaxy is 55 million light years away, which I'm just going to let you think about that for a moment. It takes light 55 million light years to travel the distance between us. This is extraordinarily far, but as galaxies go, a relatively nearby galaxy. To give you context, the nearest sort of big size galaxy to us is 2 million light years away.
So this is quite a bit farther.
20 times or so farther away. Now we're looking for the black hole in the center of a galaxy, which is unlike the little black holes that occur at the end of certain massive stars. These guys, instead of having one mass of the sun, they typically have billions with a B of masses of the sun, what we call solar masses. Are you still with me?
Yep.
Okay, cool. Well, the problem is to photograph such a thing is that it is so incredibly far that you need a resolution that's not really within the grasp of even the very best telescopes on the planet or around the planet. We just can't do that. The only way of doing it is pretending that you had a telescope the size of the Earth. And you can imagine what you do is taking a telescope the size of the Earth, or a mirror, I should say, in the telescope. And you take that mirror the size of the Earth and you break it into little pieces and you scatter it in different strategic spots around the Earth. And then you tell computers, okay, computers, now, please consider where the shards are and use them in unison to make a pretend picture. Well, a real picture from a pretend telescope. This is called interferometry, and we have gotten very sophisticated at doing this. So it is possible we were able to do that. Of course, it takes hundreds of people, right? All kinds of cool software. I still find it amusing that these telescopes collect something like a terabyte of data a day, which is, I'm quoting here, so I want to get the number right. It is basically 5,000 times the selfie budget of any individual person in a lifetime.
And that's every year.
Every day.
Every day?
Yeah.
Holy moly.
So that is so much data that they couldn't possibly take it through the internet or whatever. What they do is they fill some suitcases and they just fly it on a 747. And that is, in fact, the fastest way to send that much data from point A to point B. Which I think
take that spectrum.
Yeah. That's right. So they analyzed the data and they were able to take a picture of a black hole. And what's wonderful about it is that if you had, and such things existed, people would anticipate what that picture would look like based on Einstein's predictions and how the light curves around the black hole, and given the direction that the black hole is spinning, there's going to be more light on one side than the other, approximately the size, where the event horizon begins, and where you have the last sort of stable orbit for photons. It all matches perfectly. So it's yet again Einstein scores. And
more than 100 years after.
More than 100 years. And that whole thing, that the ideas get reinforced again, that people work together to make an observation that would have been considered until very recently just impossible. It fills me with hope, and maybe that's a great place to consider, you know, our prospects as humanity going forward for 2020.
Jean Creighton, as always, it is such a pleasure. Wishing you and yours the best.
Thank you so much.
And we'll talk in 2020.
I look forward to it as always.
Lake Effect contributor Jean Creighton is the director of the Manfred Olson Planetarium. It's located on the campus of the University of Wisconsin, Milwaukee. You can find links to all of the events that she talked about and some of our past conversations at wuwm.com.